Well, let's get back on the national stage. Plenty to discuss. And no better person to do it with than Congressman Peter King of the 2nd District, serving term number 14, by the way, in the U.S. House of Representatives. Member of the Homeland Security Committee, chairman of the Subcommittee on Counterterrorism Intelligence. Always a pleasure to have him here, aboard here. Congressman, how are you, sir?
I'm doing great. How are you doing?
Well, how's the summer going? Did you see Pete Alonso last night? My goodness.
Amazing, isn't it? Wow. You know, and all last year, you know, the Mets kept sort of downplaying him, saying it was an easy league to hit home runs in. He really wasn't that good. Then there was talk about not keeping him the first month of the season. This guy is phenomenal. Just I met him once this year, and he's just a great, great guy. He really is a perfect guy. He really has a feel not just for how to play baseball, but how to enjoy it. He really loves the whole game and loves dealing with fans, loves the give and take. I think he almost loves the ups and downs. He just seems to really, really appreciate the whole spirit of baseball.
I tell you, quite a kid, and even in winning last night, the 10% of the winnings to charity, Tunnel of Towers, I tell you, tremendous, tremendous kid. This kid is unbelievable. He shows you the passion for the game, and he gives you a sense of reality as well. I tell you, I was very impressed with that kid last night.
You know, I didn't think he was going to make it out of the first round. He was down and stuck like two or three homers, and then he come on, barely made it out of the first round. He won by one, I think, and then, of course, he kept going, but it was a great performance, really great.
Question, Pete King with us, Congressman. All right, so I heard some of the comments from the weekend from you, Congressman, regarding no legal basis for the FBI to open some sort of an investigation into the 2016 campaign and its purported ties to Russia. You still stand by that, obviously. But, you know, it's interesting to me that this conversation will never go away, especially now you got Bob Mueller to testify next week. I mean, it just goes on and on and on. My goodness, you wonder how anything can get done on Capitol Hill these days.
Yeah, I mean, this should be over. I mean, the fact is that I guess what bothered me the most was people were almost taking it for granted that it's a legitimate discussion whether or not the President of the United States is a Russian agent or was working with Russia during his campaign. I mean, to me, this is the most serious charge you could ever make. And it was almost done casually. Like we were debating over how much money was in there for a bridge or a tunnel or what a tax cut or a tax increase was going to be. I mean, this was unprecedented. And it was unprecedented that the FBI began this investigation. I mean, give you an example. When Dianne Feinstein, when she had a communist Chinese agent turned out working on her staff, the FBI didn't investigate Dianne Feinstein and her staff. They immediately told her so they could, you know, hold this person. But instead, with Donald Trump, based on a few people who had no real tie, no significant ties to the campaign, as it turned out, had no ties to the Russians either. But based on that, there's Carter Page and George Papadopoulos. They began this investigation into the entire Trump campaign. And then it was leaked to the media and it was put out there. There was that phony dossier that was used as the main basis for getting the Pfizer eavesdropping warrant. I mean, this was all terrible. If they really thought that Carter Page had some Russian involvement or George Papadopoulos had some Russian involvement, what they should have done is gone right to the Trump campaign and say, get this guy out of your campaign. We think he could be a problem. But no, they try to tie it together and make it a big, almost like a mafia organized crime case to ensnare everyone into it, and turn out there was absolutely nothing there after all that time.
Now, listen, I agree. And, you know, you look at what Mueller will do in a couple of weeks, you know, his short statement from last month, you know, kind of walking out into the sunset and everything else, and now he'll be back in the spotlight. You know, to me, it is just incredible to see these events kind of unravel a bit. You know, a very quiet man, did his job 2 years, the whole nine yards, William Barr, this, you know what I mean? You go on and on here. What about the caveat of Mueller back in front of the committee, though?
Well, I think it's going to be congressmen listening to themselves. because Mueller is not going to go beyond what he's already said. He really can't. And what you're going to have is Democrats asking questions, knowing that Mueller can't answer them. But I've got a very extravagant claims. Isn't it true that this person did such and such with the Russians? Isn't it true? And he's going to say, I can't comment on that. I can't comment. And but they're going to leave out there all these inferences. And then you have some Republicans doing the same thing. So it's going to be a show. It's going to be, I think Mueller is going to be very tight-lipped. He said all he feels he can say and should say. So it's going, but it's going to be, again, another day of Russia and Russia and Russia, and but really adding up to nothing at the end.
I guess the only positive part of this whole thing next week, it preempts that lousy show called The View. But in essence, you know, it's listen, I kind of agree. Just more diatribe going nowhere. Just another show to kind of put on for the committee, in essence. It's Congressman Pete King with us. Well, let's go to William Barr, mentioning him prior. And yes, it was interesting to me, Congressman. You know, he criticized the Supreme Court's decision rejecting the administration's argument for putting a citizenship question in the 2020 census. You know, saying the high court was wrong and stating that he believes he knows a legal way to actually get the question into the census despite the ruling. What about those words from Barr? Any weight as far as maybe an alternative here as far as what he has to say?
Yeah, I don't think Bill Barr would have spoken the way he did unless he felt he had a basis for it. Now, in the end, they can come up with a very intelligent question, a very appropriate question. But really, the idea was to get John Roberts, because he was the swing vote, to agree that the way the question is being asked or the basis for the question is legit. I think it should be in the census. I have not really a strong feeling on it, but I believe it should. I don't see, put it this way, I don't see why it should not be in there. To me, it's a legitimate question to ask, to know of a population of 350 million or whatever our total is now. I think it's important to know how many are citizens, how many aren't. Non-citizens have different responsibilities or different needs than citizens may have. It's important to know. And to me, it's a very legitimate question. Like I saw Kellyanne Conway was on this morning saying that one of the questions they ask is how many toilets you have in your house and how many people use them. Well, if that's a legitimate question, I would think it's legitimate to ask whether or not a person is a citizen. So I think Roberts, if anyone can do it, it's Bill Barr. Judge Roberts, Justice Roberts may feel that he's locked in here and he can't move on it. I think he's being as much political as anything else. He's trying to avoid a national controversy. But that's not really his job as chief judge. But chief judges see themselves as a little different from other judges in that they feel they have to be concerned about national reaction to their decisions.
No doubt. Congressman Pete King with us from the second district. I can't figure out what is happening as far as the UK these days. I know the president stated that the administration will no longer deal with their ambassador to the U.S. after the diplomatic cables leaked in which the ambassador, Kim Derrick, calling the administration, the Trump administration, and what do you call it, dysfunctional and inept.
Right.
The president tweeted back, I can't figure out what the UK is doing these days on all fronts. I'm scratching my head all over this stuff.
Yeah, I actually have met with the ambassador. He's a pretty good guy to work with, but it was totally out of line and inappropriate what he said. I think what you're seeing here is this is like the old Europe, which is just everything about Donald Trump they find offensive. I mean, they are very straight-laced. Everything has to be done just a certain way. They are masters of the appearance of the process. I mean, I've been at meetings with European ambassadors to the U.S. from really all the major countries, and you could be talking about the Palestinian issue, you could be talking about Syria, and they love to talk about meetings that are being set up, liaisons that are being arranged, how this can be done, that can be done. But really always very reluctant to make that final decision. And when they see Donald Trump, who comes in, and whether you agree with him or not, he goes, I want to do this, I want to do that, it's about time the Europeans pay up. They don't used to hear that kind of talk. They would love to debate how many angels can fit on the head of a pin. That's the type of thing. They can go on forever talking about the process and talking about setting up a special task force or a special committee or a special counsel. That's what they pride themselves on. So everything about Donald Trump, apart from any specifics that there could be legitimate questions on, just his whole attitude is enough to drive them crazy. They're just not used to dealing with someone like this.
No doubt. Congressman Pete King with us right here on LI News Radio. You know, I called it yesterday, a couple of interesting weeks here. You know, you get not only as mentioned, you got Mueller next week in front of the committee, and I think it's tomorrow you're going to have the Fed chairman, Congressman Jerry Powell. He'll go before the House Financial Services Committee, and that to he delivers his semi-annual testimony in the state of the U.S. economy, which is going pretty well when you break it all down. And I know that Powell has been criticized by the president, unhappy with the Fed chair for not cutting interest rates. Anything unusual, in your opinion, to come out of this 2-day setting here? Do we see anything that could come out of the mouth of Powell that could kind of alter what seems to be, you know, a pretty good run right now as far as the economy?
Yeah, actually, I'm on the committee. I'm looking forward to the testimony. And when I come into Congress, Alan Greenspan was the chairman of the Fed. And so my initiation was that the chairman of the Fed says a lot and absolutely nothing at the same time. Or if they do speak, they speak sort of like in riddles or like the Sphinx. You have to figure out what it means. Because, all kidding aside, one word interpreted the wrong way and the financial markets collapse. Because all the financial people around the world are hanging on every word he says. And if there is a problem going on, they usually try to keep it as concealed as possible, as confused as possible. Now, Powell, I think right now he's doing the right thing. And the reason I say that is the president is talking about lowering interest rates. And it's really an issue now with the president so directly attacking the Fed, which is not the thing to do usually. But again, Donald Trump does it his own way. But in that, the economy is doing very well right now. And usually you lower interest rates when the economy needs a boost. So I would think right now it doesn't need the boost. And I certainly wouldn't raise interest rates. But my feeling would be that it's only a matter of time before there's going to be a certain slowdown in the economy. There has to be. I mean, that's just the rules of economics. There's going to be a certain slowdown. And that's when you want to be able to lower the rates. Well, if the rates are already lowered, you're not going to have that weapon. So I'd rather save that weapon until we really need it.
No doubt. You know, it's interesting with the economy going as good. You know, tariff talk always seems to spark something. And a lot of people are not, you know, kind of talking about this, Congressman King. But, you know, we know that trade talks restarting with China. But, you know, you kind of got this new front opening up in these wars, you know, with the U.S. now threatening these new tariffs on the European Union. I think it's $4 billion or so in new tariffs on goods over there, include everything, you know, from meat, pasta, coffee, whiskey, I mean, you name it. So that would be added to a list of already EU exports worth $21 billion. U.S. trade reps stated back in April, I think it was, that would be subjected to tariffs. So what about that whole deal, the situation right now with the EU? I mean, how vital is it to kind of straighten things out? What do you see that going?
Well, I have no problem with the president negotiating tough with the EU. I do have concerns about tariffs because there's many unintended consequences from tariffs. And you get very innocent companies who can be hurt badly by it. I know when there was the recent talk of the tariffs on China, there were several small businesses here in Long Island who some of the parts that they use in their assembling come from China. And they would be hit with a heavy, heavy tariff, which would basically put them out of business. Now, this was not the intention of the president. This was like one of those almost, you call it collateral damage. Then you have other companies who, even though the deal with China, were not necessarily affected by the tariffs, the way they were structured. So, again, it's something that, to me, should be used with precision, not as a meat cleaver. And if they are going to be used in a large-scale way, it should be really a last-ditch or, you know, the very last resource that's used.
No doubt. Interesting there. You know, one other thing about the Supreme Court, and it's kind of been passed by many. I caught it. You know, these this whole discussion regarding partisan gerrymandering and the censorships, the citizenship question on the census, I think it was a 5-4 ruling there on gerrymandering. You know, what about that? You know, I look at it as a big win as far as Republicans are concerned, who control most U.S. state houses and thus redistricting efforts, so to speak. What about that whole situation where the court essentially said, when you have these types of discussions erupt over whether politicians have gone a little too far in drawing district lines for partisan gain, I looked at it as a big win, though, for Republicans there in that sense.
Yeah, initially it is. Now, in New York, it may hurt us because the Democrats control everything. So they're probably really looking forward to reapportionment. But no, I think what the Supreme Court has done here, and I actually agree with them, they are going back to what they believe is the original intent, that the states are laboratories. The states are separate for many purposes. Obviously, we're one union, but at the same time, individual state legislatures, and that reapportionment is primarily a political process. And if the people of the state vote a Republican legislature or a Democratic legislature, that legislature has the right to sort of gear it their way. Now, they can't take race into account. You can't take religion into account. And you shouldn't have arbitrary lines. I can remember there was one in North Carolina a few years ago. I think it followed the interstate almost for the whole length of the state. It went down the interstate and it took a few towns and obviously went along the way. But as long as there's some reasonable coherence to it, so long as the districts are reasonably compact, I think whether you like it or not, I think it is a prerogative of a state to try to push it its way toward either Republican or Democrat or whatever. Oh, it's not the overboard. Now, that's the question. How do you define overboard? But certainly race or religion would be one right away.
It seems to be. You know, I'll say this regarding Iran. You know, they are looking to somehow escape the sanctions and everything else going on there. You know, listen, I like what the U.S. response is, and that is really to go even harder regarding Tehran. And, you know, yesterday you had this whole thing regarding the International Atomic Energy Agency that Iran has confirmed, at least, they're now enriching uranium, you know, past the limitations set by this nuclear deal, 2015. And now they're threatening to seize Iran as a British ship, Congressman King, because UK authorities impounded an Iranian vessel that was trying to break the oil embargo of Syria. Right. I mean, it's unbelievable what is going on here. I mean, how much can we tighten the stranglehold without going to full-blown artillery? You know, in essence, I tell you, they keep poking the bear every day. I'll tell you that much.
Yeah, a lot of it is going to be up to the Europeans here. I think Iran's main goal right now is they're trying to divide North the United States, and they're trying to create the impression that the reason we're having these difficulties, the reason we have these tensions, is because the U.S. pulled out of the Iran deal and of the nuclear deal. And they're trying to get the Europeans to go easier on the sanctions. They're trying to put pressure on Europe, knowing that Europe is very reluctant to have any kind of confrontation at all. And so in doing that, I think it's important that the president stand firm, and also, you know, we keep the pressure on Europe right now. And this is another benefit which has really gone unreported. That's the extent of our energy independence. Because we are energy independent right now and we can deal with the rest of the world and we have our own sources of energy, we don't have to be giving in to the Iranians the way it was done in the past when you'd have these crises in the Middle East. Because then the advantage always went to whether it was Iran or Syria or Saudi Arabia, depending on what it was at the time. But now we don't have that. We don't have that concern because we have our own resources, and you know, the Europeans have to deal with us when it comes to energy. So we're in a very good position, and it's we got to keep it up. And I think this is right now Iran. They don't have the money to fund Hamas. They don't have the money to fund their military. They don't have the money to fund the Iranian Guard, Republican Guard. So they are in they're in a tight spot. And on the other hand, despite what they say, the last thing they want is to go to war. And nobody wants a war. But as bad as it would be for us and for everyone else, it would be far worse for Iran. They would be destroyed. and they know that.
It seems so, no question. A couple of minutes remain with the congressman. Give me your take on the G20 Japan. Kind of an interesting note of the president setting foot on North Korean soil first time. I'll tell you, that was quite a sight with Kim over there in the zone. What was your take, the handshake? I mean, do you get a sense that we will ever see Kim and the crew kind of completely denuclearize here, or are we just painting a falsehood of some sort?
I would say it's going to be difficult to get the full denuclearization. If we can slow them down and keep the pressure on and maybe each year do it incrementally, that's probably the most we can hope for, but you got to push for as much as you can. I have no problem with the president going to North Korea, but he can't be glorifying Kim. He can't be saying what a great friend he is, because he's an evil, rotten, brutal dictator. And so, this is all part of the president's selling job. I know that. He's trying to act like he's Kim's friend to get some results out of Kim. So I understand that, but we have to always keep in mind that he is an evil person. It's an evil regime. It's basically like an organized crime family masquerading as a nation. But all he understands, I believe, is the threat of force and the threat of annihilation and also the threat of being bankrupted. And we can really keep the heat on him, and we should. And we should also realize that Japan is a great ally in Asia. So whatever we do toward North Korea, we should not do it in a way that in any way weakens Japan's national defense. We have to stand with Japan. They've been very good with us. They're very good intelligence-wise, military-wise. So as we go towards some sort of dealings with North Korea, we can't do it in any way which really undercuts the Japanese.
And I'll say this, a lot of the criticism with the president and dictators, and I say, come on, I think it's a bunch of nonsense. I look at this president, and tell me if I'm wrong, but I look at this guy, he's taking a hard line with North Korea. And somewhat with Russia, and especially China and Iran. And to me, what he does matters a lot more than what he says, Congressman. And I look at past administrations where presidents did not simply embrace anti-American tyrants. They showered them with cash and diplomatic concessions. I kind of look at it that way when I hear all the criticism and everything else here.
No, on balance, I think the president's doing the right thing. And you're right, his policies toward Russia are far tougher than Barack Obama's ever were. His policies toward North Korea, it was in previous administrations where money was given to North Korea. We actually gave them food, gave them funding. With Iran, think of all the billions that they got from us in the nuclear deal, the money that was returned to them. So now the president is speaking softly, he's carrying a big stick. I'm just saying that in doing that, I want to make sure that he does not in any way weaken the position of strong allies like Japan.
All right, before I let you go, I always like to talk a little baseball. We started out the conversation with the great Pete Alonso. I'll end it with this. Let's play general manager. You be Brody Van Wagenen of the Mets. I'm Brian Cashman of the Yanks, okay? Now, here's the deal, sir. I need a pitcher. I want Noah Syndergaard. So I propose to you this, Mr. Van Wagenen. I will give you Miguel Andujar and Mr. Florio. You give me Thor, Noah Syndergaard. Do we have a deal, sir?
I would consider that. And the reason I'm saying that is, a year ago I would have said no. But Syndergaard just doesn't seem to be able to go all the way. He has this talent. He has this ability. But he can't put together a full season. He's not consistent. And maybe it'll be like Nolan Ryan, who was this way with the Mets. Then he went to the American League and became a Hall of Famer. Maybe Syndergaard is going to come into his own and become a 300-strikeout guy and 2.2 ERA guy. But right now, I think it's a deal worth considering, yeah.
Pitching, and eventually Todd Frazier is not going to be your third baseman. That's why I say Andujar, once he heals, could be a guy for you.
Having a solid season, but let's face it, his best years are behind him. That's just the reality.
Listen, always a pleasure to catch up with you. Interesting stuff, and we will certainly follow the events and have you on soon again. Appreciate a few here.
And talking about the Mets, Jeff McNeil is having a phenomenal season. He really is. Almost under the radar.
Mr. Familiar, you say?
No.
Oh, my goodness.
Jeff McNeil. Come on.
I thought you were going crazy by telling me Jer's familiar, but no, I agree with you. Listen, 351 hitter and then going into the second half. I mean, listen, you got a core there. You got McNeil, you got Alonso. I like the shortstop. Listen, my opinion, put the shortstop in center field, Rosario. Then you got a great up the middle type deal there. Listen, it's about bullpen. And you look at some of the better teams in baseball, they got solid bullpens. Mets are a disaster in that area.
I thought the Mets were one of the best bullpens in baseball going into the season. But, wow, it's been terrible.
Unbelievable. Listen, have a great next couple of weeks.
Okay.
We'll talk soon.
Okay, Jay, you too. Thanks. Bye.
I'm the great Pete King. Always, I tell you, no better person to talk events with on the national and international stage than Peter King. I'll tell you that much. Nobody.